Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Second Time Founders Podcast. We have Joe and Sarah, who are both co-hosts of the show. How is your week going?
Evan, I was almost not going to join because my hair is out of control today. I'm having a very bad hair day, but your hair is amazing. Like, you got some kind of new style here.
Yeah, during COVID.
That makes me want to just leave right now because this is
your
like,
hair looks great.
This is not good.
It looks great. No, during COVID, I obviously couldn't get like a haircut or anything like that. And then I was just like, my hair grew. Like, I literally have bangs. Like, they go down still to here.
Wow.
So I was like, hey, let's just see what the barber can do. And this is what I've got. But anyways, great for you guys to join. Appreciate Joe. I know that this is a last minute thing for you. We definitely want to have
Joe. Are you on a construction site? What is going on here?
No, this is just my little home office.
Is that a crane in the background?
It does look like a ladder. Kevin's been up here. He stayed up there. There's a loft up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kimball hang out and.
Joe is him and his wife are a very good house. He's in LA. I don't want to offer his house to anybody, of course.
I will be in LA tomorrow, so maybe I have to come by.
Yeah, we've got space.
Yeah. But anyways, I wanted to do something a little different. Typically, we just talk about the news, the day, and everything like that. I wanted to start with what drives you. Like, you as a founder, CEO, like, what actually made you do this? Like, we typically are not, well, I'll speak for myself, not healthy. It's not a healthy thing to go up. I think for me, and I'll get into my stuff, there's a lot of proving yourself and maybe you didn't feel good enough growing up or whatever. I think that can create really good outcomes for people, but also there is this really interesting, I'm sure you guys have seen the song Oliver Anthony, Rich Men North of Richmond, which is really about how everybody is in, I think he's speaking about the US, but it's just hard to get up, and this song took the country by storm. I don't know, I'm definitely happy to go first as far as like what drives me, or if either of you want to start, like, why are you doing this? Why are you putting yourself through this emotional, physical, like, pain of starting a startup? What really drives you?
There was a great viral debate on Twitter about homework for young kids who are like Keith Raboy or however you say his name, with like, every successful founder and CEO loved homework as a kid, and that is why you must give kids a lot of homework. It is very good for them and forms them into successful CEOs, was basically his argument. And
that's bullshit.
That is true for me to the extent that I did love homework and I was very serious about my homework, but I think it's more correlation than causation here, in that I think folks who are driven to be CEOs and founders were driven at a early age. It came out in other ways, obviously, because you can't necessarily start a business as a young child, though some do. But sometimes, right, like in the case of me, I was always really driven to be the best and succeed and accomplish. And I never thought anything was hard enough. I always was seeking a greater challenge. And for me, that came out in actually doing homework, being really into homework. But I don't think it was the homework itself that made me who I was. It was like, actually, that was just always in me.
Do you think that it's born into you? Or do you think that your experiences growing up with your parents and siblings and everything like that, what, or maybe both, kind of have driven you to want to go and start something from nothing? And ultimately, like, we're all venture-backed founders here, like, we're trying to create the best of the best.
For me, it was always in me, not necessarily to start a company, but this idea of wanting to accomplish and succeed. Like, I cared about that from the minute I was born, and I was never okay with the status quo and just being average. I also think all my life I had the opposite of imposter syndrome, which is I always thought I was better than everyone else.
Like, I was in the same way. I actually in the same way.
Like an athlete, and you're like, is it really too, that Joe? Hard?
Yeah,
I'm
for
like,
sure.
Oh, it is hard. So I think that those things, but also there is a nurture part of it in that my parents never dismissed that. They, in fact, encouraged it. And they said, yes, Sarah, you are the best. And I think if they had told me I wasn't, maybe I wouldn't have grown up to have such an ego and think I could start a successful business where everyone else had failed. But all my life, I grew up thinking I was the best. And then that being reinforced by my parents, who always, you know, they weren't tiger parents by any stretch, but they always encouraged me in my pursuits and never told me I was aiming too far. When I told them I wanted to go to MIT, they were like, I heard it's pretty hard, but sure, you can go there if you want. And and I'm going to get straight A's there. And they're like, you might not, but sure, go for it.
Did you?
I did. I graduated with a 5.0.
So holy shit.
They never told. They were like, are you sure? We'll still love you if you get a B. But they never told me I couldn't do it.
Joe, what about you?
Weird, because my family, my parents were like,
Kevin, what about you?
You maybe.
Can you hear me or no?
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
All right. It's weird. Yeah. My family was like extremely hands off. My parents were, I was in a lot of ways lucky that they were very good, but they really did let us just do our thing and go as far or not as we possibly could. And I had a similar, what Sarah said really resonated about me. Like, I always was just super confident and competitive. It didn't necessarily reflect in school. Like, I graduated in the bottom third of my graduating class from public high school in Las Vegas, which is, you actually have to try to not do good in that scenario. But I also didn't worry about it. I knew I was like capable and smart and having been really independent that I could just figure stuff out. So yeah, I don't know. I was always confident I could do something important, something impactful.
But what about your financial status growing up?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
Were you really poor? Like, how did that shape you today?
So we were definitely like very like middle of the road, if not more than that, like upper middle class in a lot of ways. Like, my dad had a good job in the casino industry. But we lived in an old part of Las Vegas, like 2 miles from the strip, on a small kind of one-story house. But it never felt like super financially insecure as a kid. There were, of course, bumps on the road. But my parents, again, also were just like, I took a train from Las Vegas to Boston by myself when I was like 15. Didn't even check. And well before cell phones, before anything, like, I could just literally do whatever I wanted. And not tell I would disappear for weeks and sometimes months. So it was more like my parents had means, but that didn't necessarily, we were really like on our own as kids.
Wow. What about you, Kevin?
I'll get into the story, but I want to dig into you guys first. But what do you think it actually, so obviously, Joe, you had siblings. Sarah, how many, do you have siblings?
I have one younger brother.
What, obviously, growing up in the same household, same means, all of that. I'm assuming that you guys don't have siblings that are like venture founders. What do you think, like, why you? Like, why do you have to do this? Which is one of the hardest things ever, is to create a venture-backed startup that, like, you have to think that you are going to be the best in an entire industry. And you should, if you're taking venture back money. What do you think that it was about you?
I think, but you'll definitely find a number of founders who pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and came from really backgrounds where they lived in poverty and they came from nothing to become these incredible founders. I actually think a lot more founders come from backgrounds of being middle class, not struggling with you can't get by day to day, but also not being extremely wealthy. I grew up very middle class, I would say. I never worried about getting food on the table. That was always provided. And anything I needed as far as clothing or extracurricular activities, all of those were always provided and available to me and prioritized by my parents. But we didn't go on big, expensive family vacations. In fact, I can't even remember family vacations that we took because my parents, you know, saved their money so that I wouldn't need anything. And I think that gave me both security that I could take risks in life because I didn't feel like if I failed, I would be on the street. I knew that there was someone to catch me. Even as an adult, I feel that way. Right. But I also don't come from money. And so I want it. I want more. I want better for myself and for my kids. I want my kids to go on great trips and vacations and travel the world and have amazing experiences. So I think there's a nice middle ground as far as raising kids goes, where if you have way too much as a child, that can be really problematic. And if you have way too little, you can have this scarcity mindset. And so when I look at my brother too, he has taken risks in his career. He, you know, had a really great paying job out of school and then actually went back to school to become a software engineer and now is doing that. And so it's a very different kind of risk, but he also felt like he had kind of the support to be able to follow his dreams and take that risk. But he took that risk because he wanted something better for himself and his family is what I guess he's never actually told me.
I guess it's my turn to go next. I think that similar to both of you, I definitely do think that I was lucky to be born with being just more or less like smart. So, and I don't know, Joe, how you did in school, but I got like straight A's in high school. And unfortunately, in Canada, it's a weird thing that they don't really push you to go to these top-notch schools, and SATs are, you actually can't even do them in Canada, I don't think. And so my dream always was to go and be like a software engineer at MIT, but that was actually not in the cards. I did come from, so my mom's actually visiting right now. I was telling her I was going to do this topic on the podcast, and I'm like, we came from a single, like she was a single mother, and she just couldn't like afford to put me through anything. I didn't have the chance, nor also Canada really doesn't push people to go and to like these like higher education, or frankly, just even.
Wait, did you go to college?
I went to a 2-year, the computer science, I don't know, vocational school. Yeah. And then I was lucky enough to work for some cool companies, like the only space company in Canada, and then Boeing, and excelled at all that stuff. But it's really different from Canada to the US. Even the drive I see now here, even with my 6-year-old, the drive that they have in where I live in Orinda, in the East Bay, swimming is such a huge thing. It's fucking crazy. And how much people push their kids. And also now he's reading and doing all these things, which for a 6-year-old, especially growing up in Canada, that just is not a thing. The U.S. be the best at everything definitely is a thing. And it's unfortunately we don't have Julian on this podcast as the other fellow Canadian, which I would love his take on this, but I was not pushed. And I think that I had the same thing that both you, Joe and Sarah had, that I just thought I was actually like the best at a lot of things. And I'm just like, I could fucking do this. And also for whatever reason, my risk tolerance was just super fucking low. I was willing to go. My risk tolerance was high. And I was willing to really take risk in anything in life. And how I actually ended up in Silicon Valley was like literally over one or two nights. We were living in Vancouver with my girlfriend, now wife. And I was just like, I had a really early company that it's not even mentionable, the name, but raised a little bit of money. But I came down to Silicon Valley and I was just like, this is the place to be. And over one night, I'm like, I'm moving there. And I'm like, I'm also sorry, I'm leaving you here, even though that we have a place in Vancouver. And so I was just like, I have to be where, like, I know that I can, like, thrive. And I don't know, it was just, I think that I definitely had, like, something to prove to myself and to my dad was like, and I'll say this publicly, like, he was a piece of shit, and I won't go into details on all this stuff, but he was like, he just fucking mowed lawns for a living. And I was just like, I want to create something better for my kids. And I know that I have this gift, and I did not have the financial backing, unfortunately. My mom, and she corrected me, she said that we were middle class, but I'll second guess her on that. I don't think we were. I think we were lower class. But I had all of the smarts as far as math and computer science and A+ throughout everything. It's unfortunate that Canada doesn't really push people to go to a higher education, or like also the entrepreneurship like route is not even existent there. Like, you don't even hear about outside of like shop. So here's an interesting fact. The top five companies in Canada, four of them are banks, and the other one, so like banks are not obviously creating any wealth for anybody. So it was a really interesting way to grow up. And I was just like, I want to be the best. The same with you guys.
Yeah.
I think that I have something here, and I'm like, I will do whatever I can. I was like, I need to get down to San Francisco, start my next company. And that's, I don't know, a long-winded way of my journey here.
So some people are like more intrinsically motivated, like they just follow their interests and their passions. And others are more extrinsically motivated. They are very competitive people. They see what others are doing and they want that and they want to be better. I have identified in myself, and it sounds like you, Kevin, I am super extrinsically motivated.
I am too.
I am constantly comparing myself to others, and not in a way that I want them to do poorly. I actually want to surround myself with people who are doing amazing things, because it gives me ideas and fuels my growth. And so I have found, like, when I put myself in situations where I am not the best, that's actually how I become better. And I think that was true for my upbringing. I grew up in an area that really, you know, even though I went to public school and we didn't have tons of money, I grew up in an area that really valued education. There were a lot of really smart kids that I was surrounded by, and smart people. I knew going to MIT, I wanted to be surrounded by the best and the brightest. That's why I live here in San Francisco now.
It's so important
to me to be surrounded by people that are doing big things. I think that doesn't matter as much for everyone, but for me, it's like a critical factor. And probably if I lived in the Midwest, I would be like, I'd start to think, oh, I need to have the most children to be successful. Like, I would have kind of goals. And so I like to put myself in the place where it's going to put me on the right path, competing about the right things, where it's not about how many kids do you have and how good are you at being a housewife, but it's how big can you make your business?
Yeah. Joe, how about you?
Yeah, definitely extrinsically motivated, and hopefully similar to Sarah, and that I'm not wishing anyone else to do less good. It's,
can you talk about, so like obviously of three of us, you had like the earliest success being clout, which was basically like one of the foundations of the internet. Can you talk about that? Like, how were you comparing yourself to other companies, or like your, like what really drove you?
So when I started the company, I had started a few things before that. And those companies were bootstrapped companies that were good for what they were. Like, actually made meaningful money for that point in my life and were really great experiences. When I had the idea for Clout, though, success in my mind, when I had to decide, do I continue on some other stuff I was working on or go all in on Clout? And I remember talking to my then girlfriend, now wife, and I said, if everything goes well, I bet I could grow this to 5 people, like 5 employees, and maybe Twitter will buy us for a couple $1 million. Like, that was like the furthest horizon of like success in my mind at that point. And when I had started Clout, I literally had never met not just an investor, but a Google employee. Like, I had never met a Google employee. Like, I was, even though I was doing stuff in tech, I was pretty far outside the tech scene. So my like, that still felt very ambitious to me, but it was interesting as I like ramped into the scene and you start getting around people who are really successful. My ideas of what success looked like grew with that. And I think you guys have both touched on that. And it was really valuable to see people building really great companies and really big companies. And it was interesting because not too far into the journey of Clout, we had the opportunity to be acquired by Twitter for around the money I was imagining. And it was a joke at the point because we were like, oh, we could be so much bigger. And we just went for it.
Of course.
So and Clout was a like crazy journey. And I remember the first time an investor said, oh, this is a $100 million company. And then another investor saying, this is a $200 million company. And then I remember an investor saying to me, if you don't personally make $1 billion off Clout, you should look back on your life that you screwed up because you have the biggest opportunity. And I did not make $1 billion.
Terrible.
Even close.
What ended up happening to Clout?
So we got acquired in 2014 for like around $200 million.
They sold.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. So Joe is frozen here for everybody. Are you back, Joe?
I look like I'm back on my side. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yes.
Yeah, so we got acquired in 2014 for like around $200 million.
Amazing.
Which is crazy. And it was a crazy thing. I remember when it got announced, we talk about how the value of having these ambitious friends and changing your growth mindset around that.
Right.
Yeah.
But when the deal got announced, all my like kind of San Francisco tech friends were like, oh, dude, sorry it didn't work out. You guys gave it a really good run and don't worry, you'll go bigger on the next one. And anyone else from any other point in my life was like, holy shit, this is insane. Like, how did like.
And did you raise a lot of money?
We raised like $40 million.
That's a great outcome.
So it depends.
For
some
you.
People, for me, it was good for sure. Yeah. Depending on where you invested on the journey, like it was good to find. Yeah. So it was a million stories outside of that.
But so who acquired it and did they shut it down?
So a company called Lithium that was like a SaaS enterprise marketing type thing. Bought us. They integrated it into all their stuff. They really fumbled the acquisition and kind of lost a lot of the team and nothing bad on there. It's hard to get those things right. And then they got acquired by Vista Private Equity and kind of joined with some other things and renamed. And it was interesting. I went on the board of that company and got to see that journey from that perspective. So it was a weird thing, but like, my ambition of what I thought good looked changed many times throughout that.
Right.
By the way, this is actually the first time that I've heard the acquisition price of Clout. So we are breaking news here on the Second Time Founders podcast.
It's a tough
$200 million acquisition.
I say like around 200 because it's a fuzzy number because there was a cash component and a stock component. And the stock did all sorts of
Let's
things.
Let's just keep it round at 200.
Yeah. 200 feels good.
Yeah, it feels good. Yeah.
Yep. Clout. I was a Clout chaser back then.
Sarah, you all also, of any of us on the podcast, have the most Twitter followers.
And I did at the time, too. And so I loved Clout. But I feel like it would be even more useful today because there are all these different platforms and it's really hard for like marketers to know who actually has influence and clout across all these different platforms. So you really do need a tool like that to say, okay, this influencer is worth this much. I don't think there's anything like it now.
There really isn't.
There isn't. And also, we have talked so many times about restarting Cloud like 2.0. And Joe is very adamant that it's impossible just due to all of the privacy and like getting the data and all that from all
such
of the
a different landscape
places. Yeah.
Not just us talking about it. Like, I get pinged from people, VCs and other entrepreneurs. And it's been, we got acquired in 2014. So it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
That's
the
crazy.
Problem has only gotten bigger that we were trying to solve. And there's nothing remotely like Clout, like at any scale that matters. Just shows that the ecosystem does, like, it gets stamped out right away.
So going back to our topic, which is like what really does drive you. Do you guys think, so I'll add my two cents in because I was fortunate enough to, I think when you get to like with me with Ship, which was supposed to be like, I had John Doerr on our board. We had a $50 million round. It was very similar to Joe, like the access you have to certain people. Like I had access to Travis and Brian from Airbnb. I actually developed a good relationship with him and Aaron Levy from Box and like all of this. Like, I definitely can identify with what you guys are saying as far as you're trying to create a company as big as that. Now, do you think that's healthy and also possible?
I always think that entrepreneurship is a most productive way to channel a pathological need to prove people wrong.
Yeah.
And anyone will tell you, like, it's not healthy. It's not possible. It's not a good idea. You're just setting yourself up to fail. And personally, that is really motivating to me. Like, I want to overcome those challenges and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
Sarah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it, like, you can go about it in a really unhealthy way, especially if it's not your nature to try to achieve and be the best. If it is, I think, like Joe said, it's one of the healthiest ways to channel your energy because you are assuming you're building something that you feel like really should exist in the world. You're channeling it towards making the world a better place and building something that you think needs to be there versus I'm channeling it towards day trading to make lots of money. Like, entrepreneurship is innovation. It's making lives better and easier and hopefully building a great company that employs great people along the way. So I feel like I'm doing a lot of good in the world and channeling my drive, because I've in the past channeled my drive towards things that have not been net positives for me or the world. And so I think when you're really driven, you need something to put your energy into and to put your focus and passion into. And if you're not finding it in, maybe then I would become a tiger mom and try to micromanage my kids. And that would be really negative if I try to put my passion into them, because they are very different people. And I try to be like my parents and not push my kids too hard and let them discover themselves. So I do feel like you can see where there are people that don't have a company to put their energy into and they end up doing bad stuff with their energy.
Totally. Sarah, you mentioned kids and channeling energy towards that. And all three of us here have kids. I think generally around the same age. I think a lot about, it's this weird thing where I am motivated extrinsically to have money to provide things to my family that I didn't feel like I had. But then I also think about, oh, the reason I'm successful to the extent I am is that I had all these, like I'm stripping away challenges from my kids that I think made me very...
That's why I live in the most expensive city in the entire world, because it's no matter how much I have, it's less than all of my kids' friends. They would go to their friends' houses and be like, why don't we have a pool and a bocce court and a tennis court and a basketball court? And I'm like, you're never getting that.
Do you want to mention, Sarah, some of the people that high profile people that you live around. Maybe you don't want to.
I actually live in like the poor town that neighbors a very wealthy town. So if you live in my specific town, you're probably not that wealthy because you get like a tiny little plot of land. But if you walk 2 blocks to the neighboring town, you get acres of land and you build all your courts and your pools.
Right.
And those are the kids they go to school with and they're friends with and they get invited to their houses. And I do think it's helpful for them to see that we are not that. And I don't feel bad when they ask me, like, why don't we have a swimming pool? I'm like, we can't afford one, but your friends do and they're going to invite you over. So that's why it helps to have friends. Go make more friends if you want to get invited to more swimming pools.
Yeah. I got the first Are We Poor from my 8-year-old. Like a week or something.
No, you didn't. Yeah. Really?
And the same as Sarah, I like that he is around people that have resources we don't have, so he can see that and hopefully be driven somewhat by that. But I also had to like reality check him on. We are still extremely lucky. Yeah. And like,
right.
And through LA.
And I do tell my kids that too. I'm like, we are really fortunate. We have everything that you could ever need. You don't worry about getting food on the table. You don't worry about your education and any needs you have related to your education or your health. There's lots of people that don't have that.
Yeah.
I actually really want to start, now that I have my oldest is 8, doing things as a family where we actually give back. I think at the younger ages, it's a little more performative because there's not much like a 3-year-old can actually be that helpful with.
They have nothing doing.
But with an 8-year-old, she can certainly do a lot of things that are helpful. And I really want to seek out those opportunities because I do think it's important to see both ends. No, you're not poor just because you don't have a swimming pool, but we also don't have money to throw away, and both your parents have to work, and that we're working hard to provide for you. And hopefully that gives you the drive to work hard too, to provide for your family one day.
Yeah. Also, in previous episodes, Joe has called out some celebrities that he goes to the same school as. Can only imagine what that does to your kids. But I think that also brings up an important point. I think that through the topic of discussion, like what really like drives all of us is like being super competitive. And we thought that we, like, it sounds like an agreement, like, that we were better than everybody else. I just call it out, right? I thought that I was better than, and I still do. I look at other entrepreneurs and I'm like, I'm better than you. I think that I'm going to be able to create a better company than you and bigger and better and all these things. And that is, like, part of my drive. And I don't think that's, like, a healthy thing. I look at other people that like my kids go to school with and they're like, yeah, we're just cool to just do this kind of thing. And I'm like, not for me. I'm like, I gotta be the best and all that stuff. But also, here's another question. Like, how or if or can you even, we all have kids and I'm sure people that are listening to the show do as well, how can you inspire them to create the same sort of lifestyle for their family? Or is that just impossible? And Sarah, as you mentioned, it's just like you need to let them go on their own and all these different things and their own journey. And
I just want my kids to be happy. Like, I actually don't care what they do. I want them to be happy. And I know that means like they'll need to have good jobs and be able to provide for themselves to have their basic needs met. But I don't need them to be me. In fact, like if they are not naturally like me, I think maybe some of them are, but some of them aren't, remains to be seen. I can already tell for the kids that aren't like me, this is not the right path for them. And it's something different. And if others turn out to be more like me, and I can see some of those traits come through loud and clear, if I try to do something for one of my kids,
right,
like that child will just not let me. They need to do the thing themselves and they need to redo it if I do it. And that's exactly how I was. Like, I need to do everything myself.
Maybe I'll rephrase the question, right? All of our kids are definitely going to grow up in a privileged like house. And unlike, I'll talk about myself, like I I always did actually dream of doing a CS major at MIT, and I literally just could not afford it, and nor would my school be good enough, even though I had A pluses across the board.
Right.
Could I have got a scholarship to do that? So like that just wasn't on the table. Like how do you like remove the privilege that our kids are going to get? And I even see it now in our 6 year old. He just gets like shit all the time. It's just, oh, I did this thing and I built him a tree fort in the, a tree fort in our backyard, and he's cool. And it's just, they just get everything all the time. Is there a way that you can like stop that? And I think what drives us is different than what we, because we didn't have all those things, and you don't want to have spoiled brats and all of that and all of this. I don't know if you've thought about that a lot. I definitely have.
I think I got more than my kids are getting. In that, my mom was actually a stay-at-home mom most of my upbringing. So I got a lot of care and nurturing in terms of if I needed to be picked up or transported to activities. We didn't have tons of money to throw at everything, but I had my mother, which is, it's hard to get anything better than that.
That's
whereas
a good
my kids don't have that. Yeah. They're at school till 5 p.m. or later when I pick them up from aftercare. And they're like, I also have three of them, and like my mom only had two. And so it's just like they get less. Unfortunately, I don't feel like they have too much. I actually feel I wish I could give them a little more attention and care, because I think at that age, like when you're a teenager, it's more about like money or opportunities. But this age, it's all about your parents and like the time you get with them. And as a founder, I just don't have that to give.
That's a good point. Joe, what do you think?
I don't know.
The $200 million man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that doesn't all go to my bank account.
Yeah. I already worked out the math of like he raised $40 million. Maybe he owned 10% of the business.
Yeah.
But like it wasn't all in cash. And so like maybe he got, it gets small fast.
It totally does. And
I've been to look, this, where Joe is sitting is a very nice guest house. So, and he lives in LA. He's doing, and his kids go to school with celebrities. So Joe is doing very well.
Yeah, it's fine.
He hasn't shaved. He's wearing a t-shirt. We don't know.
Also, he's also early stage startup, still hasn't launched his company.
I don't know.
Thankfully,
you don't know his net worth.
You came on the pod.
Not 200 million
today.
That's for sure.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm just joking. Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
It's so tough. The kids are just different than, I think Sarah said it really well. They're not me, and I don't want to try to force them in any way to be me.
Right.
They will have their own challenges inevitably to overcome. And I hope to like give them tools to overcome whatever that might be. But would I like them to be like tougher? Sure. Would I like them to be more...
You're also a boxer, to be clear.
Yeah, appreciative of the stuff they get, for sure. And I try to teach them that and remind them of that. But it's hard. They're just kids. It's tough for them. Yeah, I think of it when we drive to school every day, we drive past the Hollywood sign. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's a famous, like, worldwide known landmark. And you guys...
They're just like nothing.
It's like nothing to them. And that people from all over the world dream of coming to Hollywood and LA.
Yeah.
And I try to even tell them that. And it's they just don't have the context yet to make sense of any of that. And other than remind them and try to like take them to other parts of our city, country, and world that are like not this, it's tough to do much else. I would love to figure it out. I just don't know what that is.
Yeah. I don't either. Sarah, do you have any ideas?
I think parents can really ruin kids, or your upbringing can ruin you. Like I said, if you don't have enough means, then you might just be so scared and unwilling to take risks. Or if you are showered with too much, you just forget. You lose all motivation. But aside from screwing up a child, I think it really is in you. And it's hard to develop that if it's not who the person is or wants to be. If you don't want to be an entrepreneur, I don't know that you can make someone into that, or if you even should. So I just worry the most about just screwing my kids up. I don't want to screw them up. As long as I don't screw them up, then I think they will become who they are meant to be. And it really is not up to me all that much anyway. And like you were saying, those of us that have siblings, we went our own paths, and that was predetermined from the start, and less about whatever our parents did to make us into entrepreneurs or not entrepreneurs.
Question. And then let's move on to some like other tech, like news or something.
Gossip.
Gossip. Yeah. Let's get in gossip.
Gossip.
Would you, and also the Joe, the $200 million man, and Sarah, obviously you're going to do insane things with your career, and hopefully I will as well. Would you give your kids a trust fund?
For sure. Yes. I hope I can give them some money. I don't know that they need, they definitely don't need
to go to school or. Yeah.
Growing up, I never worried about food on the table or something like that. But I also I really had to make my own money. Since I was like basically left my house at 18, I've definitely spent more money supporting my parents, I believe, than they ever spent supporting me growing up. And I would like my kids to have a little bit of cushion. And so, if I am fortunate enough to make enough money that's like beyond they won't necessarily get all of it. But I do hope to put them in a position where like they can really follow their dreams.
Yeah. Sarah, the best advice I got was like, you don't really ever want, if you have lots of money, you don't ever want your kids to know how much you really have until they're like way older and established. And so I think if I ever am in a position to set up a trust fund for my kids, it will be something they don't have access to until much later on, until they're well established. But ideally, I would love to be able to do that, and just they won't know about it or really understand how much they have. They might understand they have some savings or some money, but not if it is, if it becomes substantial, I don't want them to know because I don't want to F them up, like I was saying.
Right.
When I graduated college, so my parents, they paid for my college. And then when I graduated, I was allowed to keep the leftover money. And my mom did this like genius thing. She found, I guess at the time, it was like a 529, but you would put the money in the tuition of a specific school. And if that school's tuition prices increased, the amount of money you had saved would increase by that amount. They since changed that rule after 1 year, but she found out that Penn State was going to increase their tuition by double. Penn State had publicized it. She put all the money into Penn State's tuition and then it doubled. And it was like this amazing hack that they then got rid of. But that allowed me to have money to pay for MIT. And then I actually had some money left over, like not that much, $100,000. And I always, when I was getting started out, like that was meaningful. I always felt like I could have a little buffer. It didn't change the course of my life to have that kind of nest egg, but it was something and it gave me a start. And so I would love to give something like that to my kids where they don't start their lives with debt. They actually start having their college paid for it and then having a little nest egg to do what's next. And if I end up being able to give them more, they just won't know about it, but it'll be saved for them. And I would like to be able to do that one day.
Cool.
You didn't answer.
What's that?
What about you?
I'm still deciding on that. I definitely want to try to, without money, give my kids the best education they possibly can get. And that's also why I'm in the East Bay, which I know, Sarah, you're in the South Bay. I think the East Bay is better. Anyways, let's go move on. As far as upcoming, give them the best education they can. I want to keep them in public schools as much as they possibly can. I think that they do learn, and I want to keep them like as less privileged as I possibly can. Yeah, we're not building the pool in the backyard either, Sarah, even though that we possibly could. And so I think it's tough. It's you don't want to give your kids everything, because then they're just going to be spoiled little fucking brats, and they're going to think everything is handed out to them. And I hate the people that I've met from, and we probably have hired people from these schools, but like Berkeley or Stanford or wherever, a lot of them are just kind of pieces of shit. I just don't, I don't want to.
Berkeley's a state school.
Yeah, but still, it's up there. And also, I'm a Canadian, so I actually don't understand all of these different.
Live in the state of California, it's pretty inexpensive compared to private colleges to send your children to the UCs.
Sure. But I'll wrap up my point. I definitely don't want to have my children grow up in a state of privilege. And I've already seen that in even with our 6-year-old and getting like just insane gifts and about like for any reason and all this stuff. So I definitely want to go off of that. But let's move on. We have 5 minutes left. I know we all have actual jobs to get to. Let's get into the dirt on some tech news. Sarah, I know you're all about the tech news, so I'll go to you. I have a topic in mind. Okay. So my topic was about, actually, you'll know a lot about this, Sarah, Twitter. Elon taking over Twitter, and he has obviously cut a ton of jobs. And also more broadly, I think that, and I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, that tech had like this massive talent war, that it was just about hiring as many fucking people and everything. But the thing about technology that is really, and this is why venture capital is in it, is because you have so much leverage. The one person that you have, the leverage you have on them is just so insane.
Yep.
And that's why you've seen Twitter, I think they've cut down 75% of their staff. And to my knowledge, their actual service has not declined. However, in the 3 minutes we have remaining, their advertising has declined, as I've heard. And I don't know if that's because of Elon Musk or anything like that, but there are people in a tech company that have massive leverage. Most massive leverage would be, call it the 10X engineer. So let's call it Joe. Joe is the 10X engineer that is going to, he started Clout and he did amazing things, and he 10x. I'm joking based on our previous conversations. I can't see your face, you're blurry, Joe. But and then you have just a lot of other like core
Rucked.
Competencies of like advertising.
Yeah,
like you have to still have the core part of the business, and I don't think that, especially in given these times where everybody is cutting back so much, I don't think they totally understand, like, one engineer does not equal like one marketing person or something like that. And so in the now the 1 minute we have left, I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that.
It's, I can't make any sense of what is going on at Twitter. Like, they've cleaned a lot of people out. In a lot of ways, it's shown that there was a lot of fluff in the org, and that is fine. But then there's this whole Elon mania, political craziness, randomness that challenges in advertising business seem to be. Yeah, in a tech business, a 10X engineer can have a bigger impact than a average marketing person or a salesperson or whatever. Right. It's hard to know how to find those people and what structure to put around them. A person who's 10X at one company might not be at another. And we are all trying to figure out how to get as many of those people on our team as possible.
Yeah. Sarah, I can't make sense of what's happening in Twitter. But in general, I do think these big companies had a lot of extra cruft of people just doing jobs that didn't actually need to be done. That said, I think there are 10x people in a variety of roles, not just engineering. There are 10x salespeople. There are 10x marketers.
That's true.
And I think as a founder and CEO, especially when you're working with a small team, like you need to make sure that almost every person is a 10x person and is someone that's making a huge impact on the business, regardless of their job title. And if you have people playing a role where it's just not that impactful, you should look at moving those people to a contractor position. They don't need to be full-time, or maybe you can have someone else play that partial role. But I think there's this thought that you need everyone in certain positions, when in reality, you just need really good people that can get the jobs done to be done. And if there's a tiny job, you don't need to fill it with a full-time person. Look at who can play that role without wasting a full-time headcount.
Let us end on that note, Sarah, because we all have full-time jobs to get back to. And also for everybody listening, and hopefully you've been listening to all of our episodes, this is episode number 40, which means we've taken 40 hours out of our lives to hopefully help like first-time founders or whoever, any other founders. That is what we do. So thank you for listening. Please subscribe and do all the things. But this is our 40 episode mark.
Woo.
And also thank you for Joe for hopping in. I know he's very busy and his soon to be launched startup, which we are going to blow up on all of our social channels when it is launched. And unless anybody else has anything to say, let's end on that.
See you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
See you guys.
Bye.